Thank you, David Lesher. And again, I want to thank Rav Mailoch and, of course, Reverend Kaufman for enabling these lectures. They say that in the markets of Rome, there was a big sign hanging which said, Caveat emptor. Loosely translated, let the buyer beware. In America, we also put up such signs. It's called, all sales are final. This philosophy and this guidance of law would seem to be diametrically opposed to the Torah philosophy of business in general and sales in particular. The Pasuk in Vayikra, Perchav Hei, Pasuk Yudal, it says as follows, V'chisim kiru memke la amisecha, oikono imiyad amisecha, altoinu ish es ochiv. If a person sells whatever it should be, or for that matter, he purchases whatever it should be, he may not abuse his fellow. Now, I'm using that word to abuse as a translation of loisoinu, because the Talmud tells us that there's another verse that says, Al-soinu ish es amisoi, which is talking about abusing somebody verbally. So we're looking for a word which would apply both to monetary indiscretions and verbal indiscretions. So I think a good way to describe that would to be abuse somebody, whether verbally to say things, something which would not quite make them happy, shall we say. And for the same token, you're abusing them in business because you're taking advantage of their ignorance or their lack of knowledge. Specifically, when you're dealing with abusing somebody in a matters of commerce, there's two general categories, and we're going to break them down as follows. The first general category is when you were to misrepresent an item. Now, when you misrepresent an item for sale, that misrepresentation could be what we should call essential. What do I mean? It's not what you intended to buy in the least. For example, those of you who are familiar with the Esrog market, Esrog is a fruit that the Orthodox Jews take on the festival of Sukkot, and it's required to have various qualifications. One of those qualifications, theoretically speaking, I mean, halacha lemaisa, is that the ukitz, the tail, or the stem of the Esrog, has to be attached. Theoretically speaking, I've even seen this, where the ukitz fell off, and you could take a pin and stick it into the Esrog and put the oikets back inside, and no one will be the wiser. Of course, this is clearly not what the person intended to purchase, because it's completely invalid. It's not an Esrog, it's completely invalid. Similar, if a person were to purchase a used car, now by nature a used car is used, it's not new, otherwise it would be a new car. But a used car also has requirements that it should be considered an automobile that someone would purchase. If the transmission, for example, is leaking, and you were to wipe up the transmission in a fashion that nobody sees the leak, and the person comes to purchase the automobile, and he says, yeah, it's a used car, it's a good deal, and the person were to purchase it. So this again would be, it's not the item at all what the person intended to purchase, and that would invalidate the sale. And if we could barely understand, which may not be even Oilal Hadas, it's not something that people would really contemplate doing, but for example, a person were to go to purchase a diamond, and he's purchasing a regular diamond, and it appears to be beautiful, but in reality it's a treated diamond. And it's a treated diamond is not a diamond in the diamond market. Obviously it's a whole different thing, and that's not what the person intended to purchase. So that would be one example, that would be one level of what we call a mekach tois, where you misrepresented what you're selling. On a lower level, but still, also, perhaps as egregious, and again it would nullify the sale, in a situation where you're misrepresenting it, not to that extent, but as to the value of the thing that you're purchasing. I'm going to give you again, I'm going to lean heavily on the Esrog market, because it has a lot of scope for the imagination. Those of you who are familiar with Esrogim, they unfortunately have, due to the spraying of pesticides, they're often very tiny little black dots on the esrogim. Now these tiny black dots, if they're small enough, they don't invalidate the esrog. However, they certainly don't enhance the value or the pleasure of the user of these esrogim. So often what a seller would do is, if he's able to remove the black dots with a piece of wax, that's wonderful. But sometimes it became grafted under the skin of the esrog. So sometimes some less than scrupulous sellers take a little toothpick and they scratch off the little black dots. Now, to do that technically does not invalidate the esrog. Doesn't make it possible. However, there's two issues that arise. The first halacha is that if an esrog is scratched, it's what we call niklaf, depending on the level of the scratch, that could render the esrog what we shall call Lashon HaKodesh b'di'eved. In English, the term would be also ran. It's good, it works, but it's certainly not what a person is looking for. When a person goes and purchases such a thing and it looks so beautiful and he's unaware that this esrog was patched with, was played with, he's purchasing something at a much higher price than he would otherwise have purchased had he understood the implications of what was done to the esrog. In addition, very often, when you scratch it like that, some juice from the esrog is released, and although immediately the brown dots don't come, but 2-3 days later, the brown dots start to poke their ugly heads, and that again makes it it's not what the person intended to purchase. Again, we find by a used car deal, go buy a car from this person. Often what they do, the used car dealers, they will, it's a 1997, you can't get around the year of the car. But what you could do, when you open up the hood, the parts very often are a little bit rusty. So they take some spray paint, the silver ones they spray silver, the black ones they paint black, and it looks perhaps like, was this car ever used? Well, obviously it's 1997, it has 150,000 miles on it, we understand it was used, but somehow you're able to give over to the purchaser that the car is something more than he thinks he's getting. In the same vein, perhaps if you go to a jeweler and you want to purchase a diamond. Now, as I'm sure you all are aware, that if the imperfection is at the edge of the table, perhaps if you put a prong along the side, you're able to cover up the imperfection. So what's going to happen is, the person, now we're dealing with a jeweler, we're not talking with seasoned dealers, but if you would have a person coming off the street to purchase from a jeweler, he may say, well, look at this beautiful diamond, it's almost perfect. And the person doesn't know what he's looking at. So again, he's purchasing something much more, or much less, than he imagines. All of these would be an example, but you're not charging him more or less necessarily than what it's really worth. But the point is, you're misrepresenting to the person what he thinks he's getting. All of these last three examples where the person is getting an impression that the thing is worth more than he really is bargaining for, this depends on the minhag hamakom. If you live in a place where it's well known that everybody spray paints the parts under the car, or it's well known that this is what's done in the industry, so then, since both the buyer and the seller are aware that this is the standard in the industry, so there would be no issue, because the buyer knows what he's getting. The issue only arises where the buyer is unaware of what it is that he's purchasing, and he thinks he's getting much more than he bargained for. Now, this is all the first category of what we would call oino, where the person is being cheated. But there's a whole other level which the Torah considers cheating. Now, I want to be very, very clear about this, because whenever I speak to people on this topic, they're always shocked. And the reason they're shocked is because they thought that the halacha, that the law was much stricter than the halacha actually is. There's a basic misconception in the laws of oino. Oino is, you're overcharging. Now, what's the concept of overcharging? We're going to define it exactly, what's called overcharging. But I want to make one thing perfectly clear. You're allowed to make as much money as you could on a sale of an item with a certain distinction. That means as follows. If you buy something for $100, you can sell it for $200. You buy it for $1,000, you can sell it for $2,000. You buy it for $1,000, you can sell it for $10,000. The Torah has no problem selling an item for more than you paid for it, two, three, 10 times as much as you pay. What the Torah is concerned about is overcharging what the market will bear. What is considered fair market price. Now, who decides what the market is and what is the market? How do we define the market? We're going to get there in a moment. But what I want to just quote to you, a Gemara in Bava Metzia, and that Samach Aleph, the Gemara, Rabbi asked the following question. What is the necessity for the Torah to delineate a separate law, a separate iser, a separate prohibition for stealing, a separate prohibition for interest, and a separate prohibition for oina or overcharging? And the Gemara is grappling with this question because it would seem the Gemara deals with overcharging as a form of thievery. The same way you cannot steal from someone, and the same way you cannot charge interest, you cannot overcharge someone. And the Gemara says, and you would say, well, you can't learn out overcharging from regular stealing because it's derech, the lashon is derech masu matan bekach. It's common business practice. And the fact that it's common business practice, you might think that it'd be permissible, but the conclusion is no. This is what the Torah prohibits specifically, that although it may be common business practice, the very fact that you're overcharging above and beyond the going rate, what we should call the going market price, it's considered a form of thievery. Now, what is considered overcharging? Now, there's a general rule which the Gemara tells us, and the general rule is called a sixth above the going rate, as follows. A refrigerator normally retail price, we're going to be dealing with retail right now, retails at $600. You go into a appliance store and he says, yeah, I have a great deal for you, $700. Okay, so he's charging 1/6 greater than the correct purchase price. So we say as follows, if he charges $701, then he's out of range. That's, now there always has to be a line of demarcation, just like, you know, by diamonds, you know, 1 carat is not 0.99. There's a line, you go over the line, it goes into the next category. 1.99 goes into two carats. So by overcharging, the line of demarcation is at a sixth. So if you're going to be charging $701, the buyer could come back and say, he could cry foul, the sale is null and void, he has the right to return the goods, get his money back, and move on with life. I don't want to deal with such people, they overcharge me so much. If it's exactly 1/6, meaning an item which should be going for retailing at $600, he's charging you $700, exactly 1/6 above the purchase price, the correct purchase, the going rate. So then the sale is final. However, he's entitled to compensation. He's entitled to receive back the $100 that he was overcharged. If, however, it's less than a sixth, so for our example, he was only charged $699. So since it's less than 1/6 above the purchase price, the sale is final, and we say less than a sixth being overcharged is considered mechila. It's assumed that he forgives the amount that he was overcharged. Now, so all of you would think, okay, great. So whenever I want to overcharge somebody, just make sure to keep it within the range, just under a sixth, and then I'm good to go. However, first of all, you're not going to win friends and influence people that way, but besides that, there's another problem. And the problem is as follows. How do we understand this concept that if it's less than a sixth, it's considered mechila, it's considered that he forgave? So the Rosh in Simin Dalet, in Simin Chaf, Perek Dalet of Bava Metzia, he asks as follows. When we say that less than a sixth is considered mechila, it's considered forgiveness, does that mean that since this is normative business practice, so it's, you did nothing wrong? It's normal. People are assumed that there's going to be a certain amount of, they may be overcharged, and it's considered mechila, it's normative business practice, and there's no issues involved. However, the Rosh has another possibility, and he says, maybe, really, even if you overcharged even $1 above the normal going price, it's considered oinon, you're over the lav, you transgress the prohibition of loisano ish yisachid. However, If it's less than a sixth, it's simply not worth the hassle for the buyer to try to return it. Why? Because you say it's worth this, and I say it's worth that, and now we're going to have to go and find people who are going to stand up for my position, and you'll find people who are going to stand up for your position. And it's not so clear. If it's within a sixth, within range, so it's simply not worth the person's hassle, and therefore we say he's meichel after the fact. What's the difference? That means you're not allowed to do it, but if you do it, he can't take you to Bezdin, he can't take you to court to get the money back, but practically speaking, you did the answer. The Rosh does not come out with a conclusion. The Machaber in Shulchan Aruch, he brings down the Sofik. He says, Yeshli Yistapik. He's not sure. And generally speaking, we would say, based on that, that one would not be allowed to charge higher than the going rate, the market rate, in spite of the fact that it's less than a sixth. The Ramban, in his Pirush on Chumash, actually says, the Isser of Oino does apply even if it's less than a sixth. Above the normal market price. Now, what is considered the $6 million question? What is considered the normal market price, the fair market price? Now, clearly, there's going to be a different market price depending on many, many variables. For example, the fair market price for retail is not going to be the fair market price for wholesale. Obviously, otherwise, no retailer would ever make a dollar, right? He can't. The fair market price, whatever he bought it for, is what he could sell it for. So there's going to be different markets if you're in the wholesale business, if you're in the retail business. Additionally, it's also obvious that the fair market price will depend on your location. You can't expect to pay the same price for gasoline in Brooklyn that you're going to be paying for gasoline in Wisconsin. There's just it's a different market. And being it's a different market, it's going to have a fair market price based on that market. Now, here's where things begin to get a little bit tenuous. And that is the Aruch HaShulchan says as follows. In a situation where the market is controlled, used to be many, many markets were controlled by the government. Sometimes there are other markets that are controlled by other agencies which dictate the fair market value for an item. However, in most cases in America, for example, under most situations, there's no controlling agency that says what's a fair price for a bottle of milk. And therefore, clearly, the fair market price is going to fluctuate. That means that take a half a gallon of milk, right? It's going to range. You're going to go to one store, it's going to cost you $1.79 a half a gallon. Another store is going to cost you $2.59. So all of that is considered fair market value. So when we're talking about oina or a sixth, we're talking about if you're overcharging, we're talking about a sixth over the high in this range. In other words, there's a range of what's considered fair market value, fair market price, and you're going a sixth above the range, that's what would be considered oina. And by the way, I didn't bring it up, but it's also true, like we mentioned in the pasuk, that oina isn't only for sellers, it's also for buyers. Which means if you're cheating the seller because the seller doesn't understand what value he has and you're underpaying, so again there's going to be oina for if you underpay. Now, the last idea that I want to bring up in this regard is that there's also going to be a concept called markets based on specialty markets. What do I mean by a specialty market? For example, a 24-hour convenience market is going to be charging higher prices than a store that's only open from 9 to 5 or 8 to 7, right? A large supermarket chain is going to have a different set of prices. The corner grocer is going to have a different set of prices. And a street vendor is also going to have a different set. So each one of these have their own market, and there's going to be a fair market value for each of these separate markets. Now, the obvious question is, so what is it that dictates the high end of a market? You could all ask, okay, fine, so I'm going to open a store, and everybody else is charging for a half a gallon of milk between $1.79 and $2.59. I'm charging $3.59. So now I just widened the range. What's the problem? How do we ever define a market? And the answer is, I heard this from Chaim Konchlita. He said, well, supply and demand is going to dictate what is considered a fair market value. For example, if you have a store and you're going to be selling a half a gallon of milk and everything else in your store, a dollar more than everybody else, chances are your store will not last more than a month, 2 months, you know, as long as you're able to fund this endeavor, because people are not going to come into your store. What will define for us that it's considered fair market value is if you're able to continue carrying on your business, not based on ignorant people off the street who don't know what they're doing. You know, you catch a kid off the street whose mother sent him to the store, go buy a bottle of milk, and he goes buys a bottle of milk for three times the price. So you're not going to be able to sustain a business like this. If on the other hand, for example, you have a store and your ambiance in your store is such that people think they're buying half a gallon of milk. Well, you know, they're going to call the store the Flying Kangaroo, right? And I want to go to the Flying Kangaroo. That's the store where I want to buy my milk. So if you're able to do that, so you've created a new market. And absolutely, you'd be allowed to charge what you consider to be fair market value. Now, before I deal with the diamond industry in particular, I'd like to introduce you to one more concept. And that concept is found in the Rosh, in a tshuva, the response of the Rosh in Klal, Kuf Beis, Sif Dalet. And he has as follows, the following question. Let's say we have two seasoned businessmen, and they're both aware of the price of an item. Let's say, for example, the going price of an item is $700. And the person comes in there and he says, okay, I'm going to buy it. Okay, how much do you want for it? I want $1,000 for it. Now, that's clearly what we call in Hebrew, yoyser mikidei shadas toye. It's more than a person could err. You know, it's a $700 item. You're selling it for $750. People can make a mistake what it's worth. $1,000, we know that it's not worth that. And yet, he goes into it and he agrees to do the deal. So it's called Yoisu Mikidei Shadas Toye. More than a person could possibly be erring, we say it was understood, they're going to make the deal. Regardless, they're not concerned about the fact they're being overcharged. For whatever reason, it's worth it for him to consummate the deal. And we say, there's no oino, it's not considered overcharging, and the sale is final, and there's no further problems. Now, in the diamond industry today, as we stand, most diamonds are rated. One thing, you get a diamond, sent to the lab. The lab gives you rating by size, by color, by clarity. And after that, there are still going to be things which will dictate the value of the diamond. But generally speaking, the parties who are diamond dealers are aware of what they're buying. In fact, there's even a list which dictates the suggested retail price, what this diamond should be selling for on the retail market, and based on that, a dealer would know, well, what is it worth it for him to buy, what's it worth him to sell? It's all built into the system. At that point, if we're looking at this diamond which was rated, so then all parties involved are, if somebody pays more than what he should be paying, or severely less than what he should be paying, then that would all go into the klal of the Rosh, the rule of the Rosh, that it's yoyser mikidei shadas toye. It's much more than what a person would. There's clearly no mistake going on. I'm aware what this diamond is worth. You know what the diamond is worth. You know that I know, and I know that you know, and we're both, there's a complete meeting of the minds. And if I understand that you understand, and you understand that I understand what we're getting into over here, so then it's clear, at least like Kaisa's understanding and like Shulchan's understanding, that under such conditions the sale would be final and there would be no place to claim afterwards, yeah, but I was cheated. You were cheated, but you went into the deal with your eye, with both eyes open, clearly understanding of what was being done. The question would, however, still pop up in a situation where a person purchased a diamond and he did not yet, it was just manufactured, and it was not yet sent to the lab, it wasn't yet rated. And someone comes in, another dealer comes in, and he says, I'd like to purchase a diamond. And he says, okay, but it's not rated yet. That's fine, let me see it. He says, oh, that's an H. He says, no, that's a G. Oh, that's VVS-1. He says, oh, no, it's VVS-2. Right? And they're haggling over the quality, over the weight, you could weigh. But the everything else, they're busy haggling over. So finally, one of them gives in. Now, sometimes when one gives in, he's right, and the other one was right, and he was wrong. But it's very conceivably possible that the other one was right, and he was wrong. Right? The one giving in might have been right. So when we say over here that since there's no what we call kedesh adas toya, people are making a mistake. It's clear he made a mistake. Maybe he made a mistake over here. Maybe he made a mistake. So I believe that under these conditions, again, we would say, listen, I'm a big boy, you're a big boy. I'm looking at the diamond, I see what it is. You're trying to pull the wool over my eyes. I know, I'm a dealer, I know what the diamond is. So what's happening? What's happening is, it's worth it for me to sell it to you or to buy it from you on your terms, not on my terms. And this again would be considered kedesh adas, yoisumi kedesh adas toya. I went into this deal with both eyes open, you went with both eyes open, and there would not be a taina of oina. So the question arises, in the diamond industry, is there really a problem of oina? Is it ever possible, conceivable, to overcharge someone? And the answer is a resounding, in my opinion, a resounding yes. And let me tell you where the problems begin. The problem really begins when dealers start selling to retailers. Now retailers, jewelers, and other retailers, a lot of them, many of them are very, very, they themselves were once diamond dealers and they themselves understand what they're purchasing. However, the facts on the ground are that there are many dealers who really, really don't know what they're purchasing. They want to purchase a diamond that they could sell for $2,000. If they could sell for $2,000, they don't really care what this diamond is, what quality it is. Hey, listen, if it looks nice, if they could get away with it, so they will purchase a diamond which is well out of range. I shouldn't tell you this. The Gemara says, when I think it was Rabbi Yochanan, when he started teaching the laws of Einoah, he says, woe is to me if I say, woe is to me if I don't say. If I don't say, then people are going to do averis, people are going to do sins. But if I do say, I'm teaching people how to cheat. But you should be aware, that there are jewelers out there who really do not know what they're looking at. And the fact that you're able to sell him a diamond for a well inflated price simply because he's unaware of what he could be getting, what he should be getting for this price, does not remove the prohibition of oino, of overcharging somebody. Because, and in fact, oino doesn't matter if you were cheated. Let's say you were cheated. The fact that you were cheated doesn't mean you could go cheat somebody else. It has nothing to do with that. And the point is, if you are selling more than what the diamond should be selling for, now that's level one. What's even more egregious and more prevalent, I believe, is the jewelers who are actually selling to the end users. I'm familiar because I've spoken with dealers, and they tell me what goes on. So that people have brought them diamonds which they purchased from jewelers, and they said, well, the marriage didn't work out, or the engagement was off. They want to sell the diamond. They says, you know, what'd you pay for it? And it was like, completely out of range. And the reason this happens is because the average person in the street doesn't know from DVI-1 and doesn't know from doesn't know from any of this. He simply knows, oh, it's a diamond. It looks like a carrot. Looks like a carrot. Okay. Looks like a carrot and a half. Looks nice. Put it on a nice setting. And they're completely unaware. And under those conditions, we can't say, well, what we're saying is that the retailer is taking advantage of the ignorance of the buyer. Now we can't say, well, there's an ignorance market. The same way you have a specialty market for people who are buying on Fifth Avenue, there's a specialty market selling for idiots. No, this is not considered a market. The market is based on an intelligent, informed, not intelligent necessarily, but an informed consumer that he knows what he's purchasing, and based on that, he's paying the price that he should be paying. Now, we're going to open. Anybody has any questions they'd like to ask on what we've spoken about so far? All good?
What about the markup? Retailers have a specific markup with sometimes worth much less than
okay, so there is no, I'm not clear your question, but I'm saying like this. There is no problem for a retailer to mark it up as much as he pleases. As long as the final price that he's charging is within the range of the retail market. What I mean by that is as follows. If everybody else is selling this mounted diamond, for example, a diamond, he's selling, let's stick to the diamond, he's selling this diamond for $2,000. And he's selling it for $2,000. It happens to be, he got this diamond, for whatever reason, at a tremendous discount. He got it for $1,000. No problem. He could, the markup is fine. He can make as much markup as he wants. The only problem is if everybody else is selling the same diamond for $1,500, he can't be selling it for $2,000. Now again, we did say that there are different markets. You know, a retailer on Fifth Avenue is entitled to be charging a higher price than, for example, a retailer in Shreveport, Louisiana. It's just not the same market. Okay? Yes?
Before about both Big Boys and me and whoever I'm selling to.
Yes.
Let's say I'm looking at a stone by a guy. I know I can recut it. He doesn't realize that there is that value there. And I know that if there is a higher value, if I take a chance with the stone, stick it back on the real chance.
Let me tell you, there are people who are gamblers. There are people who are gamblers and there are people who are not gamblers. The fact that you know that you could take a gamble, there's potential, but at the same time, there's a potential for loss. The very fact that he's not willing to cut it doesn't mean he's ignorant as to the potential. It's just a matter of he's a conservative investor and you're more of a aggressive investor.
What if he does know? And what if he would know?
It's still the gamble.
I'll tell you my opinion. I'm not going to tell you as a definitive sock. My opinion is, although there is, if he knew he wouldn't sell it, I don't believe that is significant in this transaction. Because in this transaction, as the stone stands today, this is its value. He's selling you for fair value. You know, if it was an example, let's say it was an old sefer that was signed by the mechaber. Some sefer was signed by the author. So if it's not signed, it's worth $2,000. If it's signed, it's worth $10,000. So under those conditions, you would have to tell him, by the way, on page 36, he signed his name. Because that's intrinsic. It's intrinsically worth more today. The fact that it has potential, you know, there's no end to potential. The question is actualizing the potential. Today, the potential is what it is, and I don't believe it's an issue.
But there is also a market then.
There is a market for potential, but that's not where we're right now. We're on 47th Street selling diamonds. We're not selling potential. I hear. Perhaps I'm telling you what I believe is the case. If you want to argue with me, you could do that. Yes. Again, could you say it one more time? Sorry, it's a little bit noisy. To resist the price?
I was saying, no, I'll argue the price, and at the end of the day, he overpaid.
Yeah, so.
Buying the property is overpaid. As opposed to somebody that the trust people doesn't understand.
Correct. There is a distinct difference. That I believe that is that. In other words, in the event that you know what the price is worth, and he knows what it's worth, and you know that he knows that it's worth, and you're charging him, you're overcharging him anyways, and for him it's worth it. That would not be enough. You're allowed to do that. It's only in the case, like you're saying, where you're pulling the wool over his eyes. He's unaware of what he's purchasing. Correct. Now,
can you change pricing before higher than the?
To the person's nose.
Let's say, like, we go to the city with a show, kosher eaters, the restaurants has a special menu for them.
So again,
more users.
So again, the ambiance of the situation lends itself to a different market. In other words, when you're at a show, the price is one. You know, you go to an amusement park, a can of soda costs you $2.50. Is that the going price? Yes, in an amusement park, that's the price. So at a show, the price for diamonds perhaps is going to be elevated. Absolutely. Yes.
Is there any or not in luxury items that are useless?
Okay, great point. First of all, diamonds are not useless. Just get anybody in the room. Many fine people make their livelihood from diamonds. You can't say they're useless. Now, there is a general rule, which the Mishnah actually says in Bar Mitzvah, that there is no overcharging by karka, by land, and by shtoris, which are business documents. You sell a debt, an IOU or something like this. Although that is the case, by the way, that only means after the fact. the Ramban again in Chumash says you cannot overcharge more than the going rate, even for karka, even for shtarais. It's only that you can't come back and claim afterwards that you want a refund. But the actual issue there is, in fact, the pasuk which speaks about kisim kamem kana misecha kana miyad misecha, I'll tell you that it says a misa. That whole parasha is talking about selling land. So the Ramban says he clearly has to be referring to the issue of land also. In addition, many Rishayim, not the Rambam, not the Shulchan Aruch, but many Rishayim, Taisa says that the din of there's no enough by karaka is only till 50%. Above 50%, if you're charging double, then more than double, then there is enough even by karaka. But that's good to decide. Luxury items. There's a Mishnah which discusses avonim toivos, diamonds, jewelry. Is there a problem of enough by jewelry? And the answer to that again is a machloikis between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that people want and need these luxury items, and they're willing to pay the price, and if, although the person may not be aware that he's overpaying, but it's worth it for him anyways because he needs it. It should fit into the brooch, or a brooch. It should fit in to piece of jewelry, and therefore it's considered fair market price, even though it's well inflated. We do not hold like Rav Yehuda, we hold like the Tanakama, that even by luxury items, even by diamonds, there is a fair market value. Again, there's going to be a range. It's not going to be this dollar. It's going to be a range. What's considered fair market value, depending on the market you're dealing with. Okay?
I just want to add an addendum to that.
Yes.
Just a lot of people buy items for speculation in future markets. If you're charging because of a future market, you thought of a future market, is that also considered not ona?
Okay. It's a little bit sticky the way you're wording the question. Oh, not the way you're wording it, but my understanding of the question. That means, are we talking about large diamonds, like 10 carat diamonds? Are you talking about a regular 2 carat diamond?
Yeah, large.
So large diamonds, by their nature,
or just like where a market has fallen for certain reasons because they're not so desirable, the market's very slow on that item, but you feel that in a year it will be, but can you try to push it?
Okay. So now you're getting into a whole nother topic. I'm going to lean a little bit on another concept to explain what it is you're asking. We have a concept: if a person sells his own private stock, for example, a person has furniture. He has a beautiful couch, leather couch from imported from Italy, and his neighbor comes over. He says, "Oh, that's a beautiful couch. Could I buy it? Are you crazy? Yeah, I want to buy it. But listen, I paid $5,000 for this couch. Yeah, but I really like it. I'll give you $10,000. He says, "Listen, I like my couch. You know, I've made many simchas in my house on this couch. I want to buy the couch. $10,000 is yours. It's not only not. You only paid $5,000. That's the going price in Italy. But the point is, people don't part with their personal items. And if you want to pay it, you want to pay the price, then it's done. The way you're describing the speculative market, that from your perspective, is that, listen, these diamonds I invested in, I believe, right now it's a depressed market, I believe the price is going to go up. But to me, they're still worth what I paid for them. So you might consider them, what the Ketzais refers to as Lididi Shavali. To me, it's worth that money, and if you want to buy it, you're entitled, but I'm going to stick to my guns, and you're entitled to do that. Yes. Okay.
So according to what you're saying, if a person has a store in Fifth Avenue and could ordinarily get a lot, and you are an intern in the club, then you can really charge you this Fifth Avenue prices even though you're in the club, because I can get that money when I go back to my store.
Could you? Absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't bat an eyelash. Okay.
I see the diamond. I see that. I can prove it a diamond. I'm here to tell the guy.
I don't believe so. Okay, so thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed today's. And thank you all for coming.